The Weekend, I'm Ed Kalenge. The sentencing of Bill Cosby. She covered the case every step of the way, and she was in the courtroom earlier this week. It's always great to chat with Jill Stanley from Proof with Jill Stanley. Jill, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Ed.
All right. You were there Monday, Tuesday, Norristown, Pennsylvania. America's dad gets 3 to 10, and he must register as a sex offender. Take us there.
Yeah, well, the big kind of crux of what happened here, he was always going to have to register as a sex offender as a result of the conviction last spring. The big thing, the big news and the big fight was over would he be designated a sexually violent predator. And it seems a little bit like we're splitting hairs because he is 81 years old. It's not as if his time on the registry is endless. But what the difference is between just being kind of a run-of-the-mill sexual offender and a sexually violent predator are the requirements for reporting and for counseling. So he has a lifetime of reporting, which means until he is no longer on this earth, he will have to register where he lives and let his officer or the court system, who's ever kind of overseeing his registration, where he goes. Now, we know where he is going, and we know where he is now, so he certainly doesn't need to register that. And that kind of was the interesting news, is that they stepped him back. That's the term we use. You know, this is a man who was out on bail. He was convicted of 3 sexually offensive acts, aggravated indecent assault, 3 felonies last April. He's been basically scot-free. He's out and about. He can't really leave Pennsylvania, but this is where he prefers to be anyway. But he was out on bail. So a lot of people thought that this judge might go easy on him. He is 81 years old. Is he a flight risk? Is he really a risk to society anymore? And that they might allow him to be out while on appeal, even if sentenced to prison time. I would like to say, I never thought that. I think I've gone on record with you and said I never thought that.
Yes.
I always thought he was going to get prison time. I always thought he would not get bail at the time of sentencing. What I was wrong about, however, which I am not too proud to admit, is that I actually thought he was only going to get 1 to 3. So when he got 3 to 10, I was pretty happy because this showed that the judge took very seriously the incident that happened, and he was so moved, as was anyone who has read it, Andrea Constand's victim impact statement. Now, I have spoken with Andrea several times in the courtroom, and she is lovely and has a peaceful energy about her, but it's just so interesting when you read her letter that is just something she is fighting so hard to maintain for 15 years. One of her most moving lines in the letter, and I encourage all your listeners to read it. You can read it on my website or pretty much anywhere on the internet now. But she said, when this incident happened, I was a woman of 30. Now, I'm 45. I'm a middle-aged woman, and I have been stagnant.
Think about that one statement right there. I mean, it means so much. And when you're a judge and you hear that, you know, and you've spent so much time in a courtroom as an attorney, as a prosecutor, now in your role now, and you see judges, how often are judges truly impacted by these victim statements? I mean, after a while, can they become kind of like white noise? Does something really have to jump out like that to grab a judge?
You know what? I think you make a really good point, and I think that's what Judge O'Neill said here. He said, you know what? I was impacted by this statement. The goal of the victim impact statement is to very clearly state what the impact of this crime was on your life. Now, she did not read it aloud in court. In fact, she went up on the stand and basically said, this is my victim impact statement. I have detailed my suffering here. I trust the court will do the right thing. She didn't read it again in court, and that was, I think there was something in that message. In some ways, she wrote the statement. It was beautifully written. It was so heartfelt. You got this picture of such a vibrant, happy, athletic, healthy, upbeat young woman whose life was decimated by this man. It was decimated. You do not end reading that letter feeling like something terrible didn't happen to Andrea Constand. So while people might want to say, oh, it was 15 years ago, move on, you can see very clearly that she did not and could not move on. And this, maybe this, is the final straw that says to her, you know what? I have to let this go now. I am free. I am no longer at risk. and I'm going to live my life now. And I sure hope she does. In fact, the other line that I loved in her letter, she wrote, I look forward to looking forward, because she has not been able to live looking forward.
That one word, stagnant, I mean, that is so powerful. It means so much.
And especially when you see, you know, she really does have this, you know, when we speak of a light that someone has inside of them, we all don't have that, and that's okay. People can live without that. She has it, and she had it. And her family members, they did all speak, by the way. Her sister, her mother, and her father. And so lucky for Andrea to have a family behind her.
Right.
But they spoke about this light, this lightness that Andrea had, this confidence, yet just joy to her.
Mm-hmm.
And how it went out. It was gone. This incident, it made her question everything about herself. And that is really the saddest part of this. She questioned everything about herself. And she did nothing wrong.
And she lost a decade and a half because of this. And she'll never, ever get that back. I mean, you can pick up and move on from here, but you cannot go back and fix those feelings and fix being stagnant for a decade
and a
half.
And both of us, you know, we've lived those years, and we know how much growth happens in all those years.
Oh, exactly.
There's more growth in that. And she even spoke about her private life in her letter. She said, I am not married.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a significant other. I live with my dogs. And she was so vibrant before. So it is that change in such a happy, full life that didn't have to happen. And she now is in the healing arts and speaks to that as very medicinal for her and very healing for her. But yet she still suffers so much.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it was funny. I spoke to her on Monday, and she has new hair. So she cut her hair, and it's blonde on the top. And I don't know if your listeners know, but I am pretty blonde. And so, we spoke, and she knows me from the prior trial. And I said, I like the hair. And she said, yeah, well, I heard blondes have more fun, and that was my summer. I had to dedicate it to having fun. So I did see that little twinkle come out in her again. And I think whichever way the court came out, whether he was sentenced to prison or probation, I think she was ready to move on, in that she got the conviction, in that she was able to be heard, and I don't think the prison time really mattered to her. I think to us in the greater world, the prison sentence does have a little more power to it. I don't think that it is a big statement for me too, that he got prison time.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't. And that is the lawyer in me speaking,
mm-hmm.
Not the public activist, but it is the lawyer in me speaking, because lawsuits, criminal cases, they are fact-based. This isn't a statement about Me Too. This is a statement about the facts in this case.
Right.
This is the statement about Bill Cosby's behavior, and this is a statement about Andrea Constand's suffering.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. And that is what is properly done in a lawsuit. It is not legislation. It is not a soapbox. It is a case with people, real lives affected, and that is all it is.
She gets the vindication from the conviction in and of itself. I mean, she, now the world knows, and the world knows exactly what happened, and it's been proven in a court of law, and he is being punished. Even if he got the 1-3 or 3-10, she still got that conviction, and she has that vindication, so she can now take that step forward. I was really taken aback by the mood, the attitude of the Cosby camp right after the sentencing. Publicist Andrew Wyatt comes out, says it's been the most racist and sexist trial in the history of in the United States, and then says they persecuted Jesus and look what happened. Were they surprised by this? Were they not expecting 3-10? Were they not expecting being registered as a violent offender? Why such vitriol from the Cosby camp when they kind of knew what was coming?
Well, you know what? I actually think they didn't think he was going to get prison time.
Wow.
Based on his age and based on his alleged blindness. So they thought, you know what? He's out on bail last time. He was convicted. I mean, those convictions were hard and real. He was a convicted rapist at that point, and yet he was given bail then. So I think they thought that there might be a little mercy for him for his age and his state of health, and that they might let him out on bail, or they might suspend a sentence. I think they thought that was realistic. And if you see Cosby asked the judge when he was inquiring about the registration requirements of a sexually violent predator. He said, well, if I go out for a night, basically, or if I go just state to state, am I going to have to tell someone and register? So I think that shows his mindset. I think he thought he was going to be, you know, maybe doing shows again. And I'd like to let you know when I'm in Vegas.
Their whole perspective on the defense, on what they expected to happen and how they thought they were treated during this whole process. He was also throwing out charges about some of the experts they brought forward and made accusations against them. This was just, I just found it to be very, very odd and very misplaced. Of course, you're going to be upset because you lost the case. You didn't think that he was going to get jail time. But I just think if they were looking to try to preserve whatever they could from the esteem that is Bill Cosby, they flushed it away. I mean, they did not do themselves any favors by behaving that way this week.
I agree. I will say that his counsel in the courtroom, however, was very professional, very much sticking to the law, argued very, very powerfully for Bill Cosby, but did not engage in any of the shenanigans that the PR team has chosen to engage in. So the law stayed the law. Judge O'Neill had so much control over this courtroom, and he was really impressive at every turn of this entire litigation up until the end. And I think that he was in a very, very tough position because he needed to not make a statement about Me Too. He needed to only make a statement about the Commonwealth versus Bill Cosby Jr., and that is what he did.
This one case.
Yeah, so very, very powerful sentence. I am not a fan of Cosby's, we all know that, but even I, when I saw him with his shirt sleeves rolled up and the handcuffs walking out of court, even I felt empathy for this man. I don't excuse what he did, and I think the sentence was correct, and I am happy about it. But I did feel a little something that surprised me, because I think the downfall. It is such a massive fall.
That picture of him being led out of there in handcuffs, and you think about, I mean, what this man had as a career and where he stood, literally the pinnacle of American society all through the 70s, 80s, and 90s, America's dad. And then to see on the front page of the New York Post on Wednesday, that picture with the headline, Cuff Huxtable, that was his moment of reckoning, and that's when it hit him. I don't think it finally hit him because, hey, I'm a celebrity. I'm Bill Cosby. Hey, I was convicted on felonies and I'm still living at home watching TV, eating cheese doodles. No, this is it. This was your moment. And he realized then that it is completely over and that his legacy is shot. And when people think of him, they will think of him as a violent sexual offender, not as Cliff Huxtable, not as Fat Albert, not as with I Spy with Robert Culp 50 years ago. They're going to think of him as a violent sexual offender. He got what was coming to him. He had that moment of reckoning, and now he's an 81-year-old man who's going to spend a lot of time in prison and have a lot of time to think about what he did and what he got away with for a long time.
It would be nice if he actually thought about it, because the one thing that was very clear emanating from the table there was a lack of remorse.
Oh, definitely. Oh, you could just say, and you could see it in the face, and you could write, and all through this. And it was almost like this feeling of privilege that I'm Bill Cosby. You know, you cannot get through life simply by saying I'm Bill Cosby and being able to just do whatever you want to whomever you want. So, and I know this is one individual case, but it shows that there is an end to celebrity privilege when you get your comeuppance.
Yes. Good. Yeah, I think that's actually a great way to say it. And Judge O'Neill pointed it that that out. He said, no one's above the law.
No, and that's true. And in this case, no one is above the law. Well, it is finally over. You followed this case from the beginning, so a little Cosby withdrawal, but there will be other things to move on to. And
yes. Sadly, there are always other things to move on to, but there is a part of me that feels happy to close this chapter and let us all heal, let us all move forward, and let him do what he needs to do in the next 3 to 10.
Exactly. All right. So whenever we find ourselves at the corner of celeb and law, there is one person we turn to. That is Jill Stanley. You can follow Jill on Instagram and Twitter at ProofJill. Visit proofwithjillstanley.com. And again, you can read Andrea Constant's statement. As Jill mentioned, you can go to Jill's website and read that. It is quite moving. Jill Stanley, as always, thank you so much for joining us here on The Weekend.
My pleasure, Ed.
Stay with us. More to come. I'm Ed Kalenge, and this is The Weekend.